Welcome back to the Mining Pod. On today's show, we're joined by Charlie and Matt for our first episode of 2024. And similar to the mining rewind that we did with Parker Merritt of Coinmetrics, we're going to do it for ordinals in 2023. Charlie has been one of the core ordinals contributors, if you will. So we go back from the beginning of December 2022 through the present to understand what's been happening with ordinals. If you are just lost on what's been happening, this is a great recap. In an hour, you can get caught up with all the history and all the intrigue and all the important stories for ordinals, which are quickly becoming one of the most important storylines for Bitcoin mining. So stick around for this episode if you need a really good recap of what's been happening in the important conversations in ordinals. It's a new year, so we have new sponsors. We want to thank Foreman Mining for being the lead sponsor for the show. We'll hear an ad read from them later in the episode. We also want to thank Gator Mining, Upstream Data, and the Miner Mag for being sponsors as well. You'll hear from them in just a moment. Please give these sponsors a listen. Their products are awesome. I hand select them often, just know these teams myself. And that's why they sponsor the show. So give them a listen, check out their products, go to their websites, and see if it's a good mining solution for yourself. Okay, let's hear from our sponsors and then get on to the show. Want to mine Bitcoin? Gator Mining offers premium hosting with as low as one unit per client, 95% uptime guaranteed, no curtailment, 24/7 monitoring and maintenance, in-house certified repair center, clean and renewable energy, all at competitive market rates. Work with an individualized team to get hash rate flowing your way today. Gator Mining, pioneering trustworthy crypto hosting for optimal mining success. Contact Gator Mining today at gatormining.ca. Bitcoin miners, be prepared. Hash rate is moving upstream towards power plants and low-value energy. Don't get cut off. Modernize and mobilize your Bitcoin mining fleet today with Upstream Data's high-performance load centers. Plug in Upstream Data's hash hut and monetize surplus wind power reliably in the blistering heat of West Texas. Plumb in hash generators and safely convert natural gas into cash in the frigid winters of northern Canada. Upstream offers high-quality load centers that will help you mine Bitcoin safely and reliably in every application and climate. Mobilize today and start mining upstream at upstreamdata.com. Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com. Welcome back to the Mining Pod. We got a new year. This is the first episode of the new year. And so we had Charlie and Matt, of course, to join us. We're not really doing a news roundup, though. We're going to do an ordinals roundup from 2023. Charlie, Matt, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be back. It's been a while.
It has. How many weeks has it been? Three?
I don't know. I'm not counting.
It's just good to be here.
Yeah. And hopefully our listeners are enjoying it, too. We did the one with Parker. That was the last one we did. I think it was like December 21st, so not too long ago.
Make sure to go back and watch that one. That was best. That was a roundup of the last year. This is a roundup of ordinals.
Yeah, that was a roundup of mining for last year from our friends at Coinmetrics, Parker Merritt. Follow him on Twitter. This will be a roundup of ordinals from the last year. So if you're into the ordinal space, this is a great concise, or we'll try to be concise, follow up on everything. And then for those who are not super interested in ordinals, this is the way to catch up. You know, you don't have to sit through a 2-3 hour Twitter space. You can listen to this an hour and get caught up. So we're going to first hand it over to Charlie just to kick us off. Tell us where we're at right now, honestly. Like the last 48 hours, I'm hearing about centralized indexers and white blacklists. It's wild.
Wait. Can we just start with what's an ordinal?
Yeah, so if you're coming into this dry, your 2023 goal was to not learn anything, and your 2024 goal is to learn at least like two things. Here is what happened outside the rock you've been under. So this dude Casey Rodemore had this idea: I'd like to put NFTs on Bitcoin. When he was able to do this, and he kind of hacked, you might say, some script of Bitcoin. Started putting data on it. And the way we track the data that we call inscriptions is by, we actually take all the Bitcoin that's ever been, that exists, and we give the individual units of it, called Satoshis, numbers. We number and order those Satoshis, and then we call those ordinals. So we track each Satoshi as it goes through Bitcoin. Again, there's a scheme and like method to track these Satoshis throughout Bitcoin. And if you own the sat, you own the associated inscription This is an opt-in consensus, and it's taken the world by storm and dramatically changed Bitcoin. And the reason there are 5 to 10 hour Twitter spaces on it is because that's what it takes in order to be fully dialed in. So we're going to try to like condense all this, I guess, into an hour.
And that's why we have you, Charlie.
I'm here Charlie's for talking it. Yeah. The whole time.
Okay. Let's get going. You have prepared slides, right?
No, I don't have slides. I could go back. I've done a lot of presentations, but I'm going to let you lead this, Will.
That's okay. I got you. So I want to go back in time. Let's do like a little time noise. Maybe Matt can do it. Back to February or so. That's when I first heard about ordinals and inscriptions. I remember you correcting me on Twitter. I was tweeting about ordinals and I was like, look at my ordinal, or look at these ordinal things. And you're like, technically, that's an inscription. So it was a little painful.
Yeah, but everybody calls them ordinals now anyways. I still say inscriptions, but again, it's probably gonna be that losing battle over on a long timeline.
It probably will be. So Kaiser Morimoto came out with this thing. The first inscription, I believe, was December. By January, it started picking up some steam. By February, it was really like full tilt. People were downloading nodes. People were using the ORD software for the first time. Let's go to the first thing you did, which was post-COVID, or in the middle of COVID for you. You made a YouTube video. Tell us about that and tell us what you did bring on all these new people into the Ordinals ecosystem.
Wow, that is a blast from the past. So yeah. I happen to be uncharacteristically free during the month of January. So, of course, I stumble into a Discord. And I like outsider, somewhat esoteric stuff in the Bitcoin space. So, obviously, this was right up my alley. It was Discord native at the time. Not a lot of Bitcoiners use Discord. And, Casey put this out. There was a kind of a ragtag group of people helping build it. And I happen to be one of the few kind of Discord native Bitcoin people who just happened to be there at the right time and place. I put together a YouTube video just describing to the less technical person a step-by-step process of how to install the ORD client. This is the client that Casey put out, which does all the logic and does all the tracking of these ordinals to the Bitcoin ecosystem and then allows you to inscribe your inscription. And because it was from command line. Fast forward to today, we have an abundant, vibrant ecosystem of point-and-click, wallet-based browsers and marketplaces. But at the time, it was like very arcane. I mean, even to me, I'm not super technical, but give me enough time and a wall to bang my head against, and I can figure it out. So I made a YouTube video. I understand the NFT people, they're quick, snappy, visual learners. And so that, I guess, threw me into the center of things, and I've kind of enjoyed riding this wave because this is a story of changing nature of block space. That is one of the most fascinating conversations. And now the NFT people have kind of taken over the narrative, which is great, but there are multiple narratives, I think, which we will see spawned this year about other uses of what's called the inscription envelope, the little way you package the JPEG onto Bitcoin. You can package other things, any type of data. And so I think that's where this particular pod may really shine as we look at the data side. This is where Matthew, who's never really been a JPEG guy, can really shine on the block space analytics. So I'm really excited for this next year.
I will be happy to track the ordinals front with data throughout the news roundups of the year. I think, okay, I'm not necessarily an ordinals junkie, right? I love talking to Charlie because he's really got all the answers on this front. He's in the Twitter spaces that are 3.5 hours that I would frankly pull my hair out. I can't handle sit still that long. But if you just look at Bitcoin itself, right, and you just look at a lot of the just fundamental statistics. How big is the chain? How many UTXOs are there? What's the fee environment? If you just looked at 2023 and those numbers, you would kind of be scratching your head, asking yourself, how did this much change happen? Unless you are aware of this type of ecosystem, right? I actually, on a numbers front, I looked at, because we talked about the first inscription was December, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of became more widely available in May, would you say, Charlie? Is that fair?
We can go back and say what changed. Basically, yeah, I mean, we had a major change in the type of inscriptions people were making, from just JPEGs to fungible tokens. That was the kind of big change in like what people are doing. So that, yeah, that drove a lot of the new activity on chain.
So that I think we're talking about the BRC20 wave, right?
Yep.
Okay, so kind of a new methodology to do fungible tokens using the ordinal standard kicked off in May. I looked at, just before the show, a bit of a change in the UTXO set, what happened. And since May, there's been a 46% increase to now in the UTXO set. To put that in perspective, 32%, almost a third of all UTXOs have been created since May.
That's wild.
I'm gonna take it even a step further to put in context. The amount of UTXOs that have been added since May, we didn't eclipse that number in Bitcoin from the start until December 2017.
Yeah, I'll just give you the numbers on the market side.
It's 8 years.
As I was just doing the math, I'm really slow, so there was a pause there. That was 8 years.
Eight years of Bitcoin. Right. And this, to be fair, this isn't all BRC20s. It's right. People create UTXOs for a number of reasons. They also consolidate UTXOs. There are a number of different things that impact the UTXO set. But there is a clear BRC20s got released and stepwise change in the amount of UTXOs being added to the UTXO set.
I love this because you can be Matt and you cannot really be looking in the ordinals ecosystem and you can see that something has happened. You can see that that something is very different on chain and you can see that it appears to have staying power. In fact, you could just be looking at your own node and never have logged onto Twitter and be like flabbergasted by what's happening. And it's interesting because we're seeing that what's happening on chain is reflecting in culture as well, because we've had several narrative violations about what Bitcoin is or isn't, and several, you could say them innovations or threat vectors or just new ideas which have just come into Bitcoin. And this seems to be a sustained dominant trend. And I think one of the first things I said on this pod, and I say this a lot of places, like, we thought we couldn't put, finger quotes, NFTs on Bitcoin. This was universally accepted. And here we are, not even a year later, and that's all we talk about. So then the question is, what else can we not do? Could we not do on Bitcoin? Because we are seeing little inklings of that with BitVM and other. We'll see, you know, Casey was named the most influential person of the year, according to, was it CoinDesk?
CoinDesk.
Yeah, CoinDesk. I mean, influential person in crypto, which I think may actually be the case. I mean, because a lot of the things which have happened are downstream or adjacent, kind of in the flow of things. So, yeah, I don't know if you want to keep going through the history and play-by-play of what the year looked like, Will. But it's very interesting how the types of conversations we're having today are very, very different and entirely unpredictable as they were a year ago.
Can I add one thing to that, Will, before we move on? Because what's fascinating to me, as someone that's not necessarily entrenched in the ordinals ecosystem, is that there is a major change in the conversations that are being had in the Bitcoin community in general now, right? And what I mean by that is that the ordinals ecosystem is almost a new faction of the community. Bitcoin is a decentralized space, right? In a number of ways, but very much so on a social and kind of belief way, right? There are people that are very rooted in some of the cryptography aspects of the space in which it began in the cypherpunk mailing list, right? But there are people that, because they feel so strongly about Bitcoin's properties, its potential, what it can do, they attach their own beliefs onto the system. And nowadays, we have people that strongly believe in what the ordinals community are doing. We have new projects and new kind of soft fork proposals in the vein of things like CTV and things like people like talking about OpVault and BitVM and Fedimint and right, what are we going to do with Lightning? And so there are people coming from this. I saw Adam Back was talking about Taproot annexes the other day, right? People are coming at this, at Bitcoin from such a wide variety of angles these days that I think the Bitcoin politics, if you will be very interesting in 2024. And I think Ordinals is a part of that.
I'm not saying Bitcoin has always been a monolith, but it's felt kind of monolithic post-block size war culturally. And this year has really demonstrated that it's not. And I love to see that.
So we have two forks in the road, or a fork in the road we could go down here. One would be talk more about BRC20s and what happened over the summer with that explosion. Let's do that in a second. Let's keep going with this other thread, though, and talk about some of the famous predictions from the spring. The first one that comes to mind is Jimmy Song saying Luxor will be punished by the market for choosing to include the 1 megger. And the other one is from Marty Bent, who put out a tweet saying that the Ordinals fad came and went rather quickly. And that tweet was after there was kind of like a burnout on some of the JPEGs for a little bit. And I think a lot of activity moved into BRC20s. And there was certainly a dead period over the summer. Like June, July, August was pretty brutal. About 95% of the BRC20 Ordinals market was not there anymore. But Charlie, any thoughts on those two tweets? The Luxor one, I mean, you're at Luxor, so we got to give you
something. Yeah, this is an easy layup. The Jimmy Song tweet, which is ironic because I've interacted a lot with Jimmy Song over the years, marked a pico bottom for Luxor hash rate, which is up, depending on how you measure hash rate. At the time, it was 1.4 petahashes as measured by some fools, and now it's closing in on 20. So it's kind of a comedic. It's literally like within 2 days of a pico bottom hash rate. So
punished indeed.
Yeah, so punished by the market. Damn, you know, maybe I can't get any more of that punishment. With regards to Marty, you know, he's tweeted a lot. I respect him too much in the ecosystem to dunk on him much. I think, you know, I think a lot of people, he would be a great voice of someone who, he and Matt O'Dell, titans in the like hardcore Bitcoin, you might say toxic maximalist, but kind of camp. And they don't like the speculative nature of this. They're very, you know, tied to Bitcoin as a monetary asset. And this kind of changes the narrative a bit. So I don't think that Ordinals are going to die anytime soon. And I only think this gets bigger. I think the flywheel has just only started spinning. And it's kind of like there's that site that tracks Bitcoin death sentences. I've been thinking about making like an inscription that tracks Ordinals death sentences. So I think that'll be a fun topic.
Yeah, for Marty's point, echo that similarly. I think that even myself at moments, I've looked at some of the quote unquote spam that's being put on chain. And it is a little nerve wracking if you think about, hey, there's like a real use case for Bitcoin in terms of like its monetary premium, and preserving that matters a lot. But at the same time, I don't think it means that we just like kick out everything with Ordinals. So, okay, we'll leave that there. Let's go to the BRC20 summer and the explosion from there. BRC20 standard was created by Twitter user Domo, and that popped off. It's named after the ERC20 standard on Ethereum, which we've talked about on this show. It's like the typical way for moving tokens around Ethereum. Your Tether, your USDC, your whatever token is typically an ERC20. The funny things between these two different token standards is that a lot of people don't like ERC20s and how they're constructed. But then BRC20s are somehow even worse. There's some cool things about BRC20s that like you can have like a fair free mint for anyone to participate in as long as the mint window is still open. But it just like doesn't make sense because Bitcoin wasn't built for this. And it just blew up anyways because people wanted tokens on top of Bitcoin. So
can
tell
I
me about
what it is. So basically you can make an inscription. So you can put any information in an inscription, including text. Or a JSON file is the kind of colloquial term I'll use. You can create an inscription that says Charlie creates a million tokens, and then I could say you can mint or claim 1,000 tokens at a time. So, and then Matt and Will start inscribing inscriptions. Say Matt claims 1,000 tokens. Matt claims 1,000 tokens. Will claims 1,000 tokens until the full supply of the 1 million tokens that I have said will exist are out there. And then we can then transfer those. The way we transfer those initially was Matthew sending, making a stream that says Matt sends Will X tokens. And so this is where originally BRC20 did not even require the use of ordinal theory. It was simply a messaging protocol on top of Bitcoin, a very inefficient one, which has some structural issues. But nonetheless, it was easy to grok, very broadly understandable to the average person. And degens love that, especially coming from the very disillusioned kind of contract structuring on ETH and other chains. So that hit kind of narrative synchronicity. And the kind of gamification of minting these out really drove a boom in May. Since then, the protocol's changed a little bit, so we actually do need ordinal theory, as according to one of the indexers, which we'll get into. So the BRC20s have spawned an abundance of other meta protocols similar to BRC20, which use comparable, like Bitcoin as a messaging layer, mechanics. This has really introduced some interesting opportunities for MEV or front running or gamification. But the main story so far has been that because these things are generally price or fee rate inelastic, they drive up the fee rates on Bitcoin and produce a lot of revenue for Bitcoin miners. And so it's one of those things where yes, we can have kind of, they're really just all meme coins, pretty much. Meme coins, but the meme coins are actually driving real economic activity. The question is, does this mature into more material economic activity? What are we getting at here long term? That's the big question.
There are so many different lanes we could swim down with. With what you just said, but I do want to highlight that I appreciate in your minting scenario, you gave me more coins than Will. I think that's
not cool, bro.
Yeah, in this case, let's say you're more technically savvy and you're able to automate the inscribing process like many have. And yeah, you end up with more coins.
I think a note that I'll emphasize is that it seems that these BRC20 tokens, while they are inelastic in their minting, meaning in kind of layman terms that people don't really care where fee rates go. They will continue to mint these things. At the same time, they're very small transactions as they're just text. And so the amount of transactions that are fitting in the block, generally speaking, has gone up pretty significantly. And as well, these types of transactions are sort of, it's like kind of a cliche right now. And it's like a saying, we talked about it a bit before the show, but they're serving as a block space buyer of last resort. And what that means is whenever there's kind of excess space that's not being used by general financial transactions on Bitcoin, there are people waiting on the sidelines to stuffing in the mempool at certain fee rates to be included in those blocks. And another thing I'll mention, Will announced the kind of 1 megabyte inscription, which was sort of a mecha event, and I think really kind of pivotal for the Ordinals ecosystem.
4 megabyte one.
Sorry. Yeah. 4 megabyte, that's right, 4 megabyte.
4 mega.
Shoot, I lost my train of thought.
Taproot Wizard 4 mega in February.
Oh, right. It really started, I feel like, the conversation which got into MEV quite a bit about changing block construction. It wasn't necessarily as clear what the expected transactions were going to be in the next block and what they actually turned out to be. It seemed like mining pools after that point, and Charlie, you correct me if I'm wrong, started to examine the mempool and the BRC20 kind of space in general to see if there were reasons to order transactions in a block to give mining pools a greater benefit than what people may have realized. Is that right?
This is certainly a conversation among a lot of people and people who talk and think about block production. We have not yet really seen an actual mining pool clearly demonstrate MEV for BRC20s, but it's been so obvious we could backtest like what it would look like. A bit of this, you know, it's funny because like the world of Bitcoin has just not really paid attention largely to anything that happens to other blockchains. And anyone from ETH can come in and in a week be like, okay, I understand what's happening with BRC20s. Where's the MEV? And then the companies and the decision makers, the people execute in the block production space are largely have not participated in MEV at wide scale. And this is very interesting because you have a very sophisticated ecosystem, which are the primary users of this new type of transaction on Bitcoin, who see the opportunity, but they are not in the kind of driver's seat of the actual execution of it. But we're seeing, in the same way that you have some, you might call them searchers on ETH, we're seeing some early, we have a handful of examples of people actually sniping stuff from the Bitcoin, from their mempool and getting into a block so they can acquire their JPEG faster than the other person. So we've seen a handful of actual real like individual MEV, but not at the block, not in not necessarily in collusion with a block producer. So this is very, very interesting. And I'm glad I can still talk about it right now.
Hey, this is a mining pod, dude. That's what this show is for.
Hey listeners, let's talk about revolutionizing your mining operation with Foreman. This isn't your average management tool. It's an all-in-one solution for reducing costs and significantly boosting your revenue. Foreman brings a cutting-edge dashboard to your fingertips, empowering you with automated energy strategies. This means not only curtailing around real-time prices, but also strategically enhancing your profit margins through demand response. It's about leveraging energy efficiency to its fullest potential. With Foreman, you get a system that scales with your business. Inventory management for assets, infrastructure integration, and business intelligence. Foreman elevates the cash flow and production of your entire operation. To see how Foreman can redefine your mining operation standards, visit foreman.mn.
So one thing I wanted to highlight, or two things I want to highlight, the ocean mining kerfuffle, or whatever you want to call it, that happened a few months after all this with BRC20s, really highlighted what mining pools can do. And most mining pools are just using like the Bitcoin Core template for building a block. And so, yeah, they're not making a lot of exceptions yet, but they certainly could. And Ocean is now doing that, right? Like they're purposely excluding things and they give you some options. We'll get into that in a second. We're basically in like May, June right now in our timeline through the year. The other thing I want to bring up is the interest in VC money started moving into Bitcoin over the summer. And that was a weird thing to watch as a former reporter who talked to a lot of the mostly altcoin VC companies out there that would never touch Bitcoin. They mocked Bitcoin, nothing for them to purchase or build on top of it. And it makes sense. If you're a maxi and you're looking at it, a lot of these VCs just kind of come in, buy an early bag and then dump it on the market. Or even if they hold it in perpetuity, it's normally up 5x plus. For the first time, we had VCs move into it, which caused sort of like an autoimmune response from the Bitcoin community, I think, as well, where a lot of these hardline Bitcoiners don't like VCs. And so they start pushing back against VCs moving into Bitcoin and calling out teams raising funds to build. And so that's been a big thing. Another Jimmy Song tweet, as it happens, that if you have VC money coming into Bitcoin, you can't trust it. But we can trust if it goes to Lightning. So that was one thing I think we need to highlight over the summer months is while a lot of people were not super interested in ordinals or BRC20s over the summer, the on-chain values were very low. VCs saw an opportunity and moved into the space. Okay, let's fast forward to the end of the summer and start looking at probably like August, September or so. I feel like my mind's blank on what was happening there. That more or less felt like the low point where nothing was going on. There was like a little bit of a loss of hope.
Yeah, the market had considerably cooled off by then. The highs of May had kind of petered out. We had a little bit of a rise in September as one of the notable, like, incredibly high supply BRC 20 mints minted out. But it was largely uneventful outside of like some notable launches, some drama, some more collections, a lot of you might call building, if you will. A notable October where there was virtually no inscription activity. And I like to tell the narrative of an anti-inscription, anti-BRC20 bot, which may have played a role in that. And then the bot was turned off. Energy re-entered the market. Coincidentally, causation, I don't know. November was a absolute wildfire leading into December for activity, fees, everything. And so we saw the metrics across the board skyrocket again. There's probably a few cycles. There's a February-March cycle, the May cycle, and then the November to December cycle. And the November to December cycle was everywhere you go. Trading volume on these marketplaces, skyrocketing. Inscription activity, skyrocketing. BRC20 and BRC20-like meta protocol, Cambrian explosion of these things. The floor price of these collections, which is the lowest price of any of the asset in the collection, floor price is skyrocketing, and massive interest from Asia, particularly China. That is a narrative that we will probably struggle to cover given the geographic arbitrage, but the absolute insanity and mania that is happening in China right now for these type of assets is mind-blowing. So you've had some of the large conferences in, say, Taipei and Singapore for the new Ordinals, center of gravity. And that brings us to today. And I don't know if this podcast will be out before kind of the most signature event in Ordinals history since the launch, which is the Jubilee, which is a protocol, which is an event that happens on the implementation of the dominant client of the protocol. I could get into it, but basically a bunch of inscriptions are going to be recognized for the first time ever, and it has wide sweeping implications.
Let's get into that in a second. Let's unpack. You just brought up a lot of stuff.
Yeah, so sorry.
I also have a question.
Yeah. Matt, do you want to go first, and then I'll...
I'm on the edge of my seat now about this Jubilee thing.
Jubilee.
We need another hour.
We need like a little drop down of like someone dancing whenever like you say Jubilee. We could make this show a lot more produced. Okay, but go ahead. I interrupted.
Add that in the edit. Charlie, you mentioned marketplaces, and I think something we haven't talked about in the timeline of things that I'm honestly interested in. You know, we kind of went through. It got released, started to make a bigger splash. VCs came into the game. The accessibility of speculating, essentially, on inscriptions and different types of fungible tokens as well. You talked about how initially you kind of did kind of a command prompt demo of how to do this stuff in general. But I recall, you know, kind of a sweeping moment, Magic Eden integrated ordinal-based assets. I know there was a listing on OKX, right? If I recall correctly, a major Solana wallet, Phantom, which, by the way, not just ordinals, Bitcoin in general, which is interesting impact overall of this type of stuff. The demand made enough of a splash to where there were different types of infrastructural pieces that have popped up throughout the year, and curious the timeline of those and kind of the impact you think.
Yeah. I think if you come from a crypto native place, not Bitcoin native. So if you come from the crypto and NFT ecosystem, The timing of these rollouts and products seems natural to you because a week in your world is years in everybody else's. It's like dog years, basically, 1 to 7. But in Bitcoin time, this is incredibly accelerated development of tooling and product focused ecosystems. So specifically, the way you trade these ordinals and the way you really, because what you're doing really is just trading Bitcoin, little bits of Bitcoin, which are tracked. The way you trade these can look a bunch of different ways. You can do it off chain. You can do it through a centralized party. But the most popular way is actually using a more ancient technique on Bitcoin called the partially signed Bitcoin transaction, where instead of having, where you say you have more input from the person who has the ordinal you want, and input from the person who wants to buy that ordinal. And the PSBT allows one person, the two inputs, to partially sign this transaction and broadcast it together, and for the ordinal to go to the buyer and the Bitcoin to go to the seller. And then you can add other inputs and outputs to, say, if you're the marketplace, you can do a market making fee. You can construct these very interestingly. And this is fascinating because this takes what Bitcoin already had, a very like tested, well understood mechanic, and it actually just leapfrogs all of the Rube Goldberg machinery that we use to create decentralized exchanges on other blockchains. And it's fascinating, and I love it. It is currently the dominant way that these things are exchanged, and it's introduced some interesting challenges and other issues, but it is, it's, I think, one of the most least understood kind of narratives this year, which is using existing legacy Bitcoin tech to power more sophisticated markets.
Great question. I think the fact that like Phantom, things like Unisat, Xverse, all these wallets are popping off is a big deal. I have a tweet, I think from like 2020, 2021, bemoaning the fact that Bitcoin did not have a native wallet browser or browser wallet. There wasn't really a reason to have one. I think there was some stuff at the time for like a Lightning-based wallet browser, but like what were you going to do with it?
Can't really. Yeah, I mean, there's like Strike, there's like Albi. There may have been some others, but you know, they're Lightning focused, which makes sense. But what's funny is like one of the lead developers on Albi is now one of the dominant ordinals folks, Danny Deasy. So this is a similar product focused development cycle that a lot of these ecosystems have. And now you have Xverse, Phantom, big OG Solana, now cross-chain wallet, Unisat, the winner so far of the ordinals ecosystem. Leather, formerly Hero, a Stacks wallet. You also have Magic Eden rolling out a wallet, and I believe there are others. There's an OKX, the kind of exchange. It's like the Coinbase of Asia kind of wallet.
The funny thing about wallets that I think it's overlooked is wallets, native wallets, add mining revenue in forms of transaction fees, because people who are purchasing on native wallets on a browser, they're not really checking too much. Like, they're just kind of buying their stuff, right? They buy JPEG, they're just like, yeah, I'll buy it. And that money goes to a miner. And you've seen that in the Ethereum ecosystem, where having that native access with MetaMask increases transaction fees, just even just a little bit, which does matter a lot. And then also bringing in businesses that have solid revenue is another part of this. We haven't really had a lot of Bitcoin businesses that do well because there's not a lot of places to spend your Bitcoin natively. But with JPEGs and all the other things that are going to come from it, we now have a bunch of new Bitcoin native companies that have good revenue. And that means like more VC money can come to the space because people are interested in this. When MetaMask rolled out its numbers for the first time, I think they made them public in like 2020, 2021. Like, it blew everyone's faces off because they were making so much. They collected just a little spread on any flip or purchase, and they made mad money because it'd been downloaded everywhere. So I think that's nothing to be slept on. I want to go back to you, Charlie, and ask about November and ask about Asia numbers. Besides anecdotes, what kind of shows us that there's a lot of interest in East Asia for ordinals? I've seen some videos. I've heard a million comments about it. I've seen some data on flows, like general flows into Bitcoin coming from East Asia, like a lot of bids. but I haven't had a lot of ordinals related data, and I don't even know how you necessarily collect that.
It's hard outside of looking at being a marketplace and being able to say, here's all the IPs, they're coming from Asia. It's hard to say, but you can basically use this kind of rule of thumb, which is if we just assume, I mean, if we look at the kind of the narrative cycles in English speaking communities around which BRC20 tickers are hot, you can see that occasionally there's one or two every week or month, but largely these are not a part of the conversation. So we can intuit that the majority of the BRC20 activity is in Asia. And so we can just kind of like look at the actual, like, you know, fees and activity and stuff spent. And if you can even look at specifically Mandarin tickets, which are in Mandarin or have attribution to Chinese, like desirable mimetic Mandarin tickers. And you can look and you can say it's substantial. I mean, just like, I'm just going to pull one of the peaks here on, say, December 16th, you have OEV, you have SYMM, you have MTID. Some of these, and I don't remember, you have DIAO. These are popular tickers in China that never really made it into the narrative cycle in English speaking communities that I'm aware of. And then just consider, like, where's the locus in English speaking kind of trading circles? Is on Discord and Twitter. Where is the kind of center of conversation in Mandarin speaking circles? They are not on those platforms. They're on the various popular media in China, WeChat. So like the WeChat groups are wild. If you've ever kind of looked at some of the numbers on those things, again, I can't read the text, but I'm like, I look at the numbers, it's wild. So those are always really interesting. Chinese. Yeah.
I guess a heat map of sells, buys and sells would probably be helpful. I've seen some stuff of heat maps being developed. So that'd be like, when during the day are we seeing a lot of bids?
Or I could just point to, I occasionally get to review the metrics for ordinals.com, the dominant reference for the client. And it's about 15 million every other day impressions.
15 million hits, like visits?
Requests. I don't know network administration, but it is fucking insane. Yeah, it's insane.
Casey needs to put some ads on there and fund himself. That's crazy.
I think if Casey were that motivated by money, we would have seen things play out a lot differently.
Okay. That's my last question for that part. I think like the flows into Bitcoin right now make sense to catalyze BRC20s and ordinals popping up November, December. Matt, unless you have another question, Charlie, I just want to throw it to you. Like, what should we be expecting next? Like, what are indexing is becoming a bigger thing, which is funny because I was an Ethereum conversation for years. It's coming back. Indexing is becoming a thing. I heard something about like white versus black modules. Seems like there's more PFP drops similar to like NFT culture. You'll see like really hyped up PFPs are coming back and people are bidding into like Node Monkeys and Goosenals and things like that.
Yeah. I am both amazed at the speed of which developments happened, but I'm also kind of disappointed at some of the just like uncreative shit that has happened. Like it just recreating the stuff that really is like, I find uninteresting technically or from an innovation standpoint on other blockchains. They seem to be exclusively culturally focused, which is fine. I get that. This is me being, you know, kind of a purist. But I actually think that we're entering into, and I talk about this on Twitter Space, and I've talked about this in some private chats, like if the thesis for Bitcoin is to succeed, especially post-halving, we are going to see it get to be very expensive to transact on Bitcoin. Nobody is ready for this. Exchange UTXO consolidation is like comically unsophisticated, unprepared for this. Your UTXO set you think is ready, it's not. This chain, I think we're going to find that it gets really hard to inscribe JPEGs on Bitcoin. JPEG being a catch-all term for images. And especially because we have this looming narrative, which has not been front and center in the conversation. I think it should be. Roll-ups and roll-up type things happening on Bitcoin. You look at the Taproot Wizards raise, one of the prominent things happening in the ecosystem, and you have now more than one, I think four or five different groups who are publicly working on Bitcoin roll-ups. Look at the numbers for roll-ups on other chains and look at the amount of capital and wealth that can, and like, you know, economic activity that can generate, and then now multiply it by Bitcoin's market cap. And so in such a scenario, you have a lot more demand for block space from much more capitalized groups, which represent a lot more money. And I think this is a kind of a long-term being a year or so from now. This is going to be a trend. And when it happens, it's going to be absolutely wild. Santiago, I see, talking about Bitcoin L2s. Yeah, Santi, answer my DM.
So I'm going to read this really quick.
Yeah.
So Santiago is just a Twitter crypto investor. I actually don't know his whole profile, but he's a pretty big following. I think he does some stuff with Blockworks as well. He says here, quote, "Ordinals were the appetizer that woke up the dragon. Bitcoin L2 activity will be explosive. Devs may resist, but miners always have the final say, and they won't forego the juicy fee stream that come with activating $1 trillion of dormant capital of Bitcoin." Okay, so I'm not going to pull that part because there's a lot of problems in that statement. But that being said, I do think Bitcoin L2 stuff is going to be explosive. And I think ordinals and inscriptions are a part of that whole conversation because there's more demand for block space than ever, yet there's less available block space than ever. Matt?
I think people aren't going to change their spending activities unless there's a catalyst and really a monetary one, a financial one, to do so. And I think the change in the fee environment is really the incentive that brings kind of a fertile ground for people to actually test out a lot of what I'm going to call Bitcoin plugins, Lightning Liquid, right? Things like Fediment, like the Charming Mint stuff. It really, anything that defers settlement, makes transactions cheaper. It could even have people hold more funds on centralized exchanges, right? Because then you just deal with the fees and selling it directly there. So like Bitcoin banking almost. But the change in the fee environment is very real. The total amount of fees in 2023 was more than the total amount of fees in 2021 in really like the peak of the bull market, right? If you think about that. The amount of fees last year was over three times as much as we saw in 2022. Yes, we saw Bitcoin price going up, but we really didn't see the speculative fervor activity on chain that you would in previous market cycles in 2021 and in 2017, right? And it kind of toggled 2018 as well. So it's going to be really interesting when we get that coupled with a lot of the ordinal type of speculation, right? Bitcoin speculation plus the speculation on JPEGs and different kinds of fungible tokens. And what Charlie was talking about before with roll-ups and different types of VC investments coming into the space, what's really happened is there's a new playground to speculate on assets, not so dissimilar to what we see in other chains like Ethereum, Solana, so on and so forth, where people are just issuing kinds of assets. Because there's proven to be that speculative demand, it's going to attract money, it's going to attract development in ways that Bitcoiners haven't necessarily been accustomed to in the past, which I think is part of the reason why you've seen an expedited amount of tools and infrastructure being built around the Ordinals ecosystem. I think it's going to be really interesting to watch. I think kind of like long term, right? You can't get rid of like a number standard that is ordinals. I think the inscription environment will change very much. I don't necessarily want to make like hard and fast predictions, but I think a lot of the minting of these BRC20 tokens, I think there will be better fungible standards on Bitcoin. Things like RGB Taro, you know, liquid come to mind that I think are more efficient. But I think there may always be kind of rare sats, the discernible sats on this number line that capture a lot that people want, right? And maybe some of the JPEG communities as well as kind of fewer and highly valuable aspects of the ordinals ecosystem. And that's what I'm interested to watch, right? And the change in block production. It's I think, a really interesting time, and it's kind of really early in general, right? I feel like I've learned a lot in this show just from
early.
Yeah, Matt's right. Like, this is a story of Bitcoin having many more people using it for a lot more things. And it's hard to make moral attributions or shouldn't we. Bitcoin, this is the catchphrase. It doesn't care. It's a neutral network. It treats people the same if you participate within Bitcoin consensus. So I think one of the other things is now a lot of Bitcoin consensus conversations back in the forefront of what we're talking about. And what's crazy is you go into the Twitter space with Ocean Mining Pool talking, and you got a bunch of cartoon avatars listening. You go into some big, you know, which have historically been like Bitcoin controlled arenas, and they are half cartoon PFPs. The tip of the spear of narrative has really turned into a multi-pronged, almost like a, you know, like a, it looks a bunch of ways, and like the conversation of what Bitcoin is happening many different places. And so I would bet 51% chance we actually decide on soft forking this year.
Whoa.
Six months ago, this was like, that might be possible. That's not totally out of the question, but probably not going to happen. Now I see it and I'm like, this, it seems like it seems highly probable. I don't know like what the timeline is for these things to happen. I don't know if like we decide to do it and then we have a whole activation period or whatever, but I think like the decision, and it's at the end of the year, we're going to know that we have decided to soft fork or not. And I would put the odds of that happening at 51%.
Can I play devil's advocate?
Sure.
Although we can do a full hour on this. I won't.
Yeah.
I promise I'll keep this short.
I'm just impressed. He drank the Udi juice so strongly. He's predicting a soft fork.
I feel like the unforeseen and really outsized impact that Ordinals has had on Bitcoin generally, we've talked about a bit throughout the show, is enough and really due to the previous two soft forks, right? This wouldn't really be happening without SegWit and Taproot, right, Charlie?
Hard to say, probably, yeah.
I mean, it's reminiscent of a lot of the Opportun stuff in the past. Yeah. But it wouldn't have happened this way. I'm confident in saying it wouldn't happen the way it is without those two soft forks. And I think because it was unforeseen, the amount of research and scrutiny that the next soft fork will go through is more than the previous two. And so I think it will take longer. And that because there's more splintering factions that have opinions on how Bitcoin should change, it will be it's harder and harder to actually form consensus around whether to activate.
Is Jeremy in for more bullying? CTV gonna pass?
Hey, he started talking about Bitcoin a little bit more the past few weeks.
Let's go, Jeremy.
So you did a great pod with him a few years ago, Will, which I really enjoyed. Didn't understand it at the time. I think back to it and I'm like, You were really, it was really cool to see you putting Jeremy on here. So, yeah.
It was early. I also did not understand it. I think the soft fork thing is interesting. I think it's a little bit of drinking the wizard juice. So I don't actually think that's going to happen. I do think CTV or something like that is going to start getting pushed through a little stronger. And I do think that there's going to be like more maximalist grumbling against ordinals and inscriptions, but I don't think there's going to be much they can do about it. So I think at some point they're just going to have to give in.
I wish I'll be the guy to say 51%. That's my kind of 100%. That's my bet.
And my big thing was Ocean Pool will have 10% of hash rate next year. So that's my
That's a good controversial one.
I'll play the house on that bet. I don't think that's gonna happen.
That was my big prediction.
I feel like we should say a soft fork and something's ordinals related is, you know, exclusive. Like a soft fork can be completely separate from anything in the ordinals ecosystem. You know, people talk about sensory and filtering and stuff like that. CTV is not that. I want to be clear for the audience.
Here's a prediction, which I think is it's kind of a layup, and because it contains no specifics, block production and block producers will be viewed very, very differently a year from now than they currently do today. We kind of lump block production into the same. We say Bitcoin miners, and we don't even differentiate between hash producers and block producers. We will differentiate between those two a year from now, and it will be abundantly clear. And I think we'll see a lot of interesting, like, diversity within the block producer landscape.
Looking forward
to close out
on this pod.
Wait, go ahead, Matt.
So I look forward to following that development on this podcast.
One of the only places you'll find it, Ordinal Hub, YouTube. You can also go check out Charlie's stuff there. Follow that along. Okay. My last prediction will be that a lot of laser eyes will get an education by the market this year on losing money by not buying inscriptions. So let's close out. Charlie, Matt, thank you for joining so much. Thank you for listening to the podcast. We have a newsletter, blockspace.media. Go check that out. You get this, but in a written format. So if you like that, go and do it. It's quick, short articles about what's happening in the Bitcoin space, whether that be tech or mining or whatever else. Also, give us a like on our YouTube channel, subscription, and follow us on here. Okay. See you guys next week.